Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello, Watch Forest Focus. It's a good weekend to be a Nottingham Forest fan as the Reds beat Sheffield United and Luton and Burnley fail to win their games. With Forest now 3 points clear of the relegation zone with two games to go, we'll discuss how many points are needed, if any, and we'll break down the Sheffield United win in full in the company of, first of all, Reds fan Greg Mitchell. Greg, good morning. How are you doing?
Great. It's been a while since we've felt like this after a weekend, so looking forward to it.
True. You've had a celebratory haircut as well. It's looking sharp. Second guest is Michael Temple. Temps, how are you?
I'm good, mate. I'm working a bank holiday Monday, but it's a match day and we've got a food festival on as well. So plenty to keep me entertained, including talking about a Forest win.
That was a subtle plug for a food festival at Trent Bridge. If anyone's got anything they're looking to do this afternoon, get down to Trent Bridge. Third guest is former Reds midfielder Lewis McGugan. Lewis, how are you?
Yeah, fine, thank you.
Good to have you with us as ever. Greg, just kick us off on, because you were there, the game, the feeling of victory, just some general thoughts before we get going.
It was a worrying first half, wasn't it? I thought, oh no, this is the Forest of old. This is actually happening. And the way they turned it round, the atmosphere, just everything, it was superb. I love Sheffield. Sheffield away games are always good anyway, and the city's great, so it was bouncing after. And yeah, well overdue, wasn't it? Well overdue. Shows these players have got fight in them, give them a lot of hope for the next two games, which are both winnable. And let's just get it done now. We've proved that we can live up to the pressure and we can do it. So let's keep it going. Have a party on Saturday and what I always wanted at Burnley away, a bit of fancy dress and just a party day.
Good to have 250 people with us inside the first 2 minutes on a bank holiday. And also thanks to James Rutter for signing to become a member. Appreciate the support, James. Temps, I know, like Greg says quite rightly, you know, we stood up to the pressure, we won the game. Were we a little bit lucky, do you think, based on the first half? Sheffield United missed a lot of chances that if other team, if we play someone else, we're probably out of sight by half time, do you think?
Yeah, first half was a banana skin. Could have easily conceded two or three goals. I don't think there was enough pressure on the edge of the box. Danilo was often the most regressive midfielder and just seemed too easy for that combination. Harmer, Brereton, Archer, Bogle all had a bit of joy and could have taken their chances. We shouldn't forget too that we created a fair bit. The Wood header, the Wood left foot chance from unbelievable cross from Morgan Gibbs-White scanning on the run. But yeah, on another day against better opposition, they punish us there. But we rode that out. And what's important is we came through and took our chances with our quality at the other end from Callum Hudson-Odoi, who we're sure to speak a fair bit about today. But first half was worrying. It was definitely a day and a part of the season where result matters more than performance, but it wasn't a first half to be proud of.
Was that the difference, Lewis? Just that quality in front of goal and quality in defence? We'll come on to Murillo and Bolly as well. I thought they had really good games. Was that the difference between the sides?
I think if you look at it from a whole, I think everyone, rightly so, the first half was quite worrying. And against a better team, we're probably out of sight by half time with the chances they created. But that's where Sheffield United are. They're not that team that obviously pushes you on a race. So I think on a bigger scale, the actual game itself, I've said numerous times that the position we're in, it's about getting the points on the board. Ideally, we want the kind of performance with it, but that's a kind of longer period. At this point in time, we need to get the points on the board, and we got them. After the first half, it wasn't looking like we was going to get them, and it was going to be a disappointing day. But I think in the second half, then when the chances came, our better players, which I think they should be doing. I think that's why we're spending the money and we're getting them kind of players in with the track record they've got, and the chances when they come along, they punish Sheffield United. And on another day, we maybe not get that little bit of luck and we're out of sight by half time. And that's why I always make a big point on sometimes in games you rise a little bit, look, and you need it and you get it. And you come out on the other side, and now we're all talking about a fantastic win, what's hopefully kept us safe. And the feel-good factor is now, and it could so easily have been different. And that's why we all need a little bit of luck, especially in football. And fortunately, we got that on Saturday. And hopefully now we can have a positive end to the season and start again.
So what was going on tactically first half, Lewis, for them to get so many chances? Was it Archer dropping deep and no one picking him up? Was it down to our midfield? Was our defence, you know, was Bolly too deep? I don't know. There were lots of things that were happening. From a tactical point of view, why was Sheffield United so on top between about 25 and 40 minutes?
I think sometimes you also have to look at it, and you can sit there and you can continue to critique. They had a good moment and they was creating really good chances. I thought, if you look at Berrettini, his movement, if you look at Archer's movement, and Hamer in that little hole, I think he was creating good chances. And I think that if you look at the second half, was they that much difference? Okay, they might have dropped off a bit, and sometimes that can happen. But there wasn't too much difference in terms of the whole game. But the chances they created was became a bit of a minimum in the second half, and then we came on top. So I think it's, again, you just got sometimes some credit to the opposition, and they went for a really good moment in that first half and creating really good chances with their front four.
We didn't start the game very well, Greg. I don't know what it felt like in the ground. I know Wood missed that chance, but then we conceded that early penalty. Any complaints from you that it was a penalty or not?
No, not at all. That Wood chance I thought had gone in as well. We were at the perfect embarrassing angle where you get the home fans giving you that ironic cheer after, because that was such a good chance. And he, in previous games, would have put it away. He's going through a bit of a sticky patch at the minute, isn't he? The Montiel one, I had a bit of sympathy with him, but it was about as stonewall as you could get. So no, there was no complaints at all there.
And then Temps, he got booked. We'll just quickly, what did you make of Montiel? We'll come back to the Brereton Diaz stuff, but what did you make of Montiel in the game, Temps?
Harry Toffolo must be wondering what he's done wrong, because Aina's an automatic pick. I think he's our best right back and our best left back. Can't play in two positions, obviously. I think he deals with pace. He's got a clip for the rest of his life of him scorching Kyle Walker. He's inked in. Why Montiel is being picked ahead of Harry Toffolo, I can't answer. I think every time Toff has played, he's been solid. He's a seven. Every single time he plays, does very little wrong. He adds that left foot delivery, which is a great option from corner set pieces, deals with his man, does his thing. So for Montiel to get minutes ahead of him, I can't quite understand. It was a clumsy, clumsy challenge. Brereton Diaz is clever, gets the touch, which is going away from him. He's never going to recover that ball, drags his feet, topples over, changes the game potentially. If Sheffield United are more adept at managing leads, which they're clearly terrible at. So Toff comes in for Montiel. Aina goes to right back for me. and that would have been a better team selection. I can't justify selecting Montiel at this point.
Let's talk a little bit about Brereton Diaz. Very kind of Lee to send £10 our way. What are the panel's thoughts on Brereton Diaz at Forest, maybe? What did you make of him, Lewis? I thought he had a really good game overall. Is he you know, good enough to come back to Forest or not?
Well, I'm not sure. Like I said, I think you look at it, he had a really good spell with Blackburn, which then got him his move to Villarreal, which he hasn't really kind of stamped to Forest when he went out there. And that, again, that can be down to a lot of things. It was a completely different climate, league and a whole culture. So sometimes that just doesn't work, as we've spoke about that with previous different players. And obviously he's got the chance to come back on loan. And I think he was bright. Like I said, I thought their front three was really bright. And it made some definitely good runs. He was bright in that front area, very quick off the mark, and he was troubling our back line. So I think on and all, I think you have to sit here and say that he performed quite well.
I like him. Go on.
I'd welcome him back. I think his goal scoring record is solid. He scored 6 in 12 in a struggling team. He was at the Man City game, watching Forest. Obviously, still has a familiarity with the area, and he just profiles differently to the player. He had some good touches inside the box against us at the weekend. Rolled Danilo for that chance that Murillo blocked when he perhaps could have slotted in Archer. But that aside, I think he carried a threat, took his penalty very confidently, and he scores goals in English football. His track record is incredible, aside from getting splinters at Villarreal, getting frozen out and needing to move, which he's been willing to do. I think he'll be in English football next season. Sheffield United won't be an option for him in the Championship. I think he's destined for a Premier League side. I'd take him. He profiles different to Wood and Taiwo. Gives us another way to play. Gives us another option from the bench if that's what we need. But I think he could force his way in. Definitely would be on my list, along with Gustavo Hama.
One gripe I know some fans have, Greg Mitchell, is that he really celebrated that goal. I think I saw you tweet about it. I personally don't care how players celebrate that much. But it wound a lot of Forest fans up. Did it wind you up the way he celebrated?
Yeah, it did. He's slapping the Sheffield United badge in front of us, so he's got no desire to come here, has he? I just think if we're going to have to sell two of our stars and create a more solid squad by buying four or five, I think there's probably better out there. However, a striker is such an impossible position to buy for, which we clearly have to, because Taiwo can't be relied on. Chris Wood's great off the bench or when we need him, but he cannot be our starting striker. So that is an absolute priority. If it is Brereton, then it's not going to be the worst thing in the world, but he's not going to be my first choice, but it's just the hardest position to buy for. If he's showing he's available, he's only got 2 years left at Villarreal, I doubt they're going to want to loan him out again because it's a waste of time for them. He's going to be looking at the lower half of the Premier League, maybe ourselves or an Ipswich that come up, maybe. That's what his agent will be telling him. And like Temp says, he knows the area, but he did annoy me on Saturday. But I suppose look at it the other way, at least he's got some heart and desire and, you know, passion for his team, even when the rest of them are down and out. But yeah, he did annoy me. It was the slapping of the badge in front of us. But it's football, isn't it? You'd rather do that than see him not celebrate, I suppose.
Greg, it'd be interesting to see what supermarket we're shopping in, because I think we would like to recruit a striker, but the days of Chelsea or someone coming in and paying 40 yeah. million for Taiwo have gone. So if we decide to cash in our chips on him as the man that's going to command the fee, then we're looking for a primary player who's probably going to need to start most games. If we're looking to just enhance the balance of the squad, get an additional option to be in that mix with those two, then it is that kind of Adebayo, Brereton, Diaz ilk of player. So I'd be interested to see how we attack that, but I don't see us being able to go out there and drop big money unless there is some left field bid for Taiwo.
No, I don't think we're going to be selling Taiwo. I was thinking if we sold, which I'd hate, Murillo and Gibbs White, and you know, you get a combined pot of 80-odd million to spend on these four or five players, that's when a quarter of or half of that goes on a striker, because it's an impossible situation to buy for unless you're a top six team, isn't it? Because just the money they demand for a guaranteed 15-20 goal scorer, it's ridiculous.
One transfer bargain we have had, Lewis, is Callum Hudson-Odoi. 7 goals now in the Premier League this season. I'm sure we'd all have taken that at the start with a couple of games to play. Just talk us through his first goal before we get into specifics. Just the technique of that first goal. I think it's a bit underrated how good that finish was. What did you make of it?
Yeah, it's when you actually slow it down and look at it, it's fortunately, it's just popped up at right at the last minute. And sometimes that happens in his coming side, and he is known for doing that. But again, it's good technique. It's something that clearly he practices a lot. And so you do them on repetition, and hopefully your end goal is to always, when you come inside, you get that little sight of goal, is to always aim for that corner. And looks like, I think it was a very good goal, and along with his the one were also at the post. So I think his first goal in general, the technique, I think it was very good, and hopefully it's a start of where he can really kick on now.
What about his season in general? And also that thing, you know, he does this cut back inside and bends it into the corner. I mean, it is repetitive, but it's hard to stop, isn't it? If it works, why would you do anything else in a way?
Yeah, that's my only thing in terms of moving forward. I think for the money we've paid for him and for where he's been over in the last kind of 2-3 years in his career, I think it was a big, big moment. It's a big step for him to get back and playing. And I think now, as he's getting more confident, he's getting fitter. You can see them rewards coming through in terms of his game. From my opinion, I just think I feel that against Sheffield United and the lower teams, I think a lot of fans would say it was quite scary. We all know what he's going to do. He did it again in the first half, and you got punished, and they still allowed him to do it, which is just it's just mind blowing. But I think when we are looking at kind of to push into that next level, and for our wingers especially to affect them games. And I think against the better teams, I think he needs to add a little bit more to his game. I think it's very kind of that come inside, it's very easy to stop. And once it stops, where's his other option? I think if you look at, for an example, I know it's a bit of a different position, but it's still the same time. You look at Ayner and the impact he has. One of the big impacts he has and why he has it, because he can go both ways. And I think that sometimes he doesn't mind. Obviously, he has that drive into midfield, and he has that drive onto the inside, but he also doesn't mind going on the outside and standing up across with his left foot. And I think when you constantly keep them defenders guessing, I think that's the biggest thing. And I think with Hudson-Odoi at this point in time, it's a bit one-dimensional. And I think against the lesser teams down the bottom, maybe we're still getting away with it, but we need him to affect when we're playing the better teams to get higher in this league. And I think he just needs a little bit more in terms of having that confidence to go on the outside sometimes and standing up that cross on his left foot. And it just keeps that defender guessing.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.
Let's just take a moment to thank our sponsors before we move on. Thanks very much to Trent Navigation, of course. If you're not already going Saturday after the Chelsea game, there's Rick Parfitt Jr. and his band playing for free at the Nav. As Greg said earlier, hopefully it's a party. It's looking like it might be. So as I said, free entry. You can get food inside and out and drinks inside and out. And it should be a lovely event. So get down if you can. And thanks to the Nav. Right, Temps. I don't want to sound negative because we had a really good win, but did Hudson-Odoi and a few other players bail Nuno out a little bit with the setup, or should we, as Lewis said, do we have to give Sheffield United credit for playing well? Because the first half, there was a period where I just felt we were really all over the shop and could have shipped at least four goals. So did Nuno have a particularly good day, or do we just have to give him credit for engineering a win by hook or by crook?
He had a bad first half, but he picked the shape that I wanted him to pick with the back four and the extra man in midfield rather than the extra centre half. But that didn't deny them space in the slot, and they caused us all kinds of problems. But I don't think that was Nuno's issue. Yates, he was playing a little bit more advanced and was chasing the ball, pressing the ball rather than screening. I just wonder if he could have been a little bit deeper to deny them space in and around there, because they were having acres. And they were popping up between the lines and causing all sorts of problems. And you made the point already, but for more quality, they could have scored three goals in the first half. But no, I'm not holding that one at Nuno's door. But if he loses that game, he's under real pressure for his job. That's how seismic each fixture is now. And we sit here as 10-1 outsiders for relegation and probably having already done enough to stay in the Premier League for another season. But if we hadn't have had Rodar look defensively in the manner that we did, and we looked at a different result, I think the pressure on him would be pretty surmountable this morning. So picked a team which allowed us to impose ourselves on them, preserved the wingers, preserved the striker, let Morgan Gibbs-White have a bit more freedom with two alongside him. But that midfield three didn't quite work. Too much space. The Bolly slip, the Murillo blocks, the Murillo recovery runs. There was a lot of scrambled defence, which allowed us to go in at half-time, having only conceded the penalty. But I think he got the setup right. He picked a team that would allow us not to over-prepare for what they're going to bring, but to impose ourselves on the game. But the midfield three, the blend of the midfield three didn't quite work, and we were let off the hook. Fortunately for Nuno, we got the result, because I think Twitter would have been an uncomfortable place for him this morning if we hadn't.
What's the feeling of Nuno in the away ends, Greg? Because I think they're quite a good barometer of how managers are viewed. Cooper had relentless support to the end. What do away fans make of Nuno from the people you speak to, out of curiosity?
It's very muted. I think he's given time just because of, you know, how much... Not a mess, I suppose, but there's a lot of organising with this squad. But there's certainly no talk of he must stay in the summer or he must go. I wouldn't be surprised either way if something different happens this summer, because there hasn't been an improvement really, has there? You know, our points per game, everything. It's still very similar to when Cooper was here. So maybe he needs that pre-season and some of his own players more, but... Yeah, back to your original question. The away ends, they're not really speaking about him a lot. They were singing his name before the game. Half-time was a bit different, obviously. And then after the game, it's back to singing about him. But, yeah, I don't know. I just think there's simple things that we could improve on. Obvious things like the mistakes against City, where we didn't make the subs when, you know, we're down to 10 men against them. It's just little things that you remember which need to get better. So, yeah, I don't know. Muted.
When Greg says there, Lewis, I wouldn't be surprised if he stays or goes. Is that kind of where you are, out of curiosity? It's a very difficult job he's got, but I kind of feel like Greg says there as well. What about you?
Yeah, I think if you look at it from when they made the change, I think originally they all probably, with the owner and the manager, they probably had plans to then push on. I think sometimes you can always have an idea of when you come on board or come into somewhere, but the reality is sometimes that once you get in and your feet under the table, that can quickly change. And I think when you look at it from that, I think we've quickly realised, and the manager would have realised, that we're probably in a relegation battle and we need to stay in the league. And I think that's the number one priority. I think originally when he first came in, maybe they would have had kind of visions to push upwards, but that soon changed. So he had to then engineer that and move that in terms of his ideas and the way he wanted to go about stuff. But I think the most important thing was to stay in this league, and that's what he would want him to do. I think from a manager's point of view, anywhere, I think if he was to go in the summer, I think his first thing would be that he never got his pre-season and his chance to really stamp his authority on the club. And that's just straight away from any manager's point of view, they will want at least a pre-season. And I think that come kind of October, November next year, if the manager stays and we're still having this discussion where we're not entirely sure, I think that we maybe have a bit more of a right to have that judgment. But I think he would be kind of saying to a lot of people, which is understandable, and I would want that as a manager, is that let me have my summer, let me have my pre-season, let me have my full time with the players, let me try and move out this squad in terms of shape it how I would want it, and then judge me. And then I think that's fair. And I think that should be the outlook in terms of looking forward now. At least let's give him the summer with the football club to shape this squad, to put his real stamp on the team, and then we can judge where we are.
Yeah, I've been reading the comments a bit while you chaps were talking. It's quite split down the middle. I don't think it provokes the kind of the passion of the Cooper debate, but it seems like people are kind of 50-50 either way on him, and then perhaps the next two games will decide a bit. So we'll come back to that inevitably as we go along in the next couple of weeks. Moving on, Greg Mitchell, you've got a lovely photo behind you of Mr. Ryan Yates. How happy were you for him? I mean, it could effectively be the goal that keeps us in the Premier League that he scored. For him to finally get a goal after coming so near in the league, you, as a fan, you've got to be delighted for him, I guess.
Yeah, and he was getting some pelters at half-time again, by the usual suspects, I may add. But, yeah, he's just, like Forrest put, he's done it in every single league now, cups. He's done a lot. He's just that. He is Mr. Nottingham Forest now. And that goal for him, and I know he had the little fear of VAR, which we all did. I mean, celebrated it like mad, but it was just brilliant. Just so, so happy for him. And he's got that captain nuts armband on. He's done it at Sheffield United with that away end again. Just so pleased for him. And I know he gets stick. He'll always get stick. If he plays in the Champions League one day, he'll be getting stick that he's not good enough. And that must be the thing that spurs him on. And he just keeps on delivering. And that was such a vital goal. You know, if we stay up at the end of the season, that's going to be one of the goals that keeps getting shown. Because, yeah, it wasn't a wonder goal, but you could just see the passion in it. It meant everything to him. And that's the kind of person you want in our team.
It was a good finish, though, Thames. Did you have any worry, though, about VAR? Especially having seen that Arsenal shambles earlier in the day when Solanke barely touches Raya and that's ruled out. I was worried it was going to be chalked off. What about you?
No concern for me. A pre-planned training ground set piece move as well. Let's give some credit there. The Alanga touch, the volley knockdown, and he's absolutely laced it, hasn't he? It's one of those where you don't even feel it coming off your foot. And then the passionate celebration, as Greg said. I think the way that Forrest marked his 200 appearances was great. Seeing his teammates talk about Yatesy and what he does in the build-up to the game was quite a heartfelt thing, actually, because I don't know Yatesy at all, but he's not a massive personality, is he? He's not a leader in a kind of he's not the big social organizer or a big voice. He leads by example, is what I'm trying to say. He grafts hard. Those that played with him in the academy knew that he did that bit extra. He was always the fittest lad. He has his 2 weeks off and he's still doing 10K every morning. He is completely dedicated to the craft of being a footballer, watches loads of football in his spare time. And he is now a lightning rod for every Forest supporting fan that sees another fan playing for their team. And the absence of Joe and Brennan has brought that even more into focus. Such an important squad man, such an important player for this team. And if anybody wants to come and displace him, they're going to have to run through brick walls. Because Sangare hasn't done it. Dominguez hasn't done it. three or four others have been bought to Forest with ostensibly the aim of being the enforcer, the grafter, the man that's going to ease Ryan Yates out of this side. And he's come back for more again and again and again. And I think he's going to do that for years to come. Might not start every week. There might be another player that comes along and does displace him. But plenty have tried and failed. And he's so important for this team.
You've walked that path, Lewis, yourself, to get to the first team through the academy. And Ryan's done it always the Premier League now. How hard is it, do you think, for him to keep warding off these challenges? We've seen Shelby and Freuler and Kouyaté, you know, players come and go or be pushed down the pecking order. I know he's not everyone's cup of tea, but you have to have a lot of respect for him, as Temp says, to keep hold of the shirt as much as anything.
Yeah, and the character, you know, the kind of a bit of the character he is. I don't think it's hard. I think that's what drives him. I think every year, I think as professional players in any sport, I think when you're at that top level, when I was playing, it was that an opportunity. Every time you come back pre-season, maybe the club had made a signing in your position and it was okay. That was it. It was go time. It was okay. They're trying to replace me. I've now got to show again why I should be playing. So I think to your question on that, I think that's what drives him. I think the continued kind of maybe the negativity of people thinking that it's very easy to replace him and he keeps coming back. That's what drives him every day. Like as Temp said, when he's working on his own, when he's in that gym, when no one's watching. And the biggest thing is opinions, you can never stop them. And it's part of professional sport. You're always going to hear people's opinions. A lot of them probably going to be more negative than positive. But I think a true indication of who you are is the people that are with you every day, the people that are looking in the changing rooms, watching your work, around you constantly. That's the true indication of who you are as a person, who you are as a player. And you can see by the video the high esteem that everyone holds him in, and that just shows the person he is. And I think, again, it's now one of them, it's if they want to keep trying to replace him, they've brought in players, as Temp said, and they haven't kind of come out and come on top. So I think it's maybe now is that every squad and every team needs a Ryan Yates. They need that mentality. They need that drive. They need that commitment. Every squad needs that. So I think that he's a massive part of that squad. As Temp said, moving on in time, maybe he might not be the one starting every week, but he's still going to be really important in that squad. And it's now a point now as a football club and a recruitment is to try and get them better pieces around him. Like I said, we've tried and it hasn't quite worked with the players being brought in, but I think he's been a common theme in that team. It's now trying to get better players around him in that central area, which will only help the team, but it'll also help him maybe take a bit more of that burden on him where he can just go about his work of what he's good at.
Is that area of the team still the one that's in the biggest state of flux, though? Because we don't know about Sangare. I don't think the manager particularly seems to fancy Dominguez. Yates, as you alluded to, is he the one to take us to the next level? And Danilo's young and very up and down, but very talented. Is that the big area of the team we're going to have to sort next summer, along with probably the central defence, Lewis?
Yeah, for me it is. And I've alluded to that on a couple of previous shows, that for me, that's that big change. I think that's what, I know we talk about strikers putting the ball in the back of the net, but that's the engine room. That's so important. That's your driving force. And I think if you look at teams, especially trying to, who have been in the Premier League 2-3 years and are trying to make that jump to be top half or maybe sneak into that last European place, I think that's the difference. I make an example of Fulham and Paulinho, and I think that's the difference now. We need to find a real centre midfielder. And I don't think it's that we keep on talking about enforcers, about that really drive. I think it's the big one is to really, a midfielder to go in there, can do that, but also make us tick, really be that everything goes through them, really be that, give me the ball, any situation, give me the ball, let me make this team tick. And I think that's where we need to go. I think if you look at the front, I know we're talking about hopefully Taiwo can come back and be a lot fitter alongside, obviously, Chris was helping. I think the two wingers are young Still a little bit raw, more so with Alanga, but I think they will just become, they're still learning. They're still playing now. They're playing 30 to 40 games a year where they haven't been used to that, especially Alanga. So they will come better. They've got time with their age to do that. I think if you look at the back four, hopefully, I think Murillo's really, really been, he's been brilliant. And hopefully we can keep hold of him and build kind of the partnership with him. And I think we're building blocks around, but I think we're still sitting here at, say, two games to go, and we still quite haven't worked out that midfield role. And every week it's Yatesy, Dominguez, and we haven't done it. They've tried, and that's fine. They've tried with Sangar and they've tried with Dominguez, but sometimes you try and it doesn't quite work. But I think to make that next step in terms of the team and to really start stamping our authority in terms of trying to get into the top half, I think we need to really, really get a big enforcer and a driver in that engine room to really make us tick.
What about Danilo Temps? Could he maybe do that? You see flashes of brilliance from him. Like he had that run and driving and then he shot, but then he's erratic with the ball and you question his positioning. Is that just a symptom of youth, or do you think he could take that step to become a really kind of elite Premier League midfielder? Do you see that in him?
I see the potential, but yeah, consistency is the key. Look, we haven't been consistent in our selection. There's two players in our squad that have started 30 or more games. That's Murillo and Gibbs-White. Beneath that, everybody's been in and out, be it through injury, be it through suspension. Taiwo and Chris Wood splitting the minutes, goalkeepers splitting the minutes before Christmas, endless debate around centre, mid and the back four. There's some players that are inked in, and if they're fit, they would start. I'd put Hudson-Odoi and Alanga in that bracket. I'd struggle to tell you what two central midfielders I'm putting in the bracket of capable of starting more than 30 games by this point in the season. Gibbs-White, obviously, Murillo, Matt Sells now. Aina if he was fit and not disrupted by AFCON. But that's a pretty stark stat. Those two players have seen endless combinations around them and have had good seasons, have been relied upon. But some of those guys who were signed and charged have given us that spine, given us that solidity, either haven't found form, haven't been able to keep themselves fit. And I think that tells a big story as of two managers trying to experiment, trying to find a combination that fits in different positions. But ultimately, here we are with two games to play. And there's only two players that have managed to keep themselves fit and be consistently inked in. That's a problem. Could Danilo join them? Well, we weren't calling for him, were we, for long periods of the season when he'd come in and struggled, not retaining the ball, not being quite as progressive as he was back end of last season when he was truly excellent. If he recaptured that form and maintained it, I'd like to add him to that list. But he hasn't been anything like as consistent as I'd like him to be. We need a spine that can keep fit and be relied upon.
Just on Dini, like I said, I really think he's a really good footballer. I think he's got more confidence as the season's gone on. I think he ended last season really well, had a bit of a stop-start kind of start, didn't really play, but he's been a kind of important part over this last few months and been in the team. I think it's a bit way to sometimes sometimes you have midfielders that are. It depends how you play that. At this point in time, with Gibbs-White being the focal point in the 10, we're playing with two midfielders deep. I think sometimes you have to look at midfielders and think they're a midfielder that can play in a 2 or they're a midfielder that needs to play in a 3. And what I mean by that is if you look at Danilo and you can put Dominguez in that kind of bracket, I think they're a midfield players that need to play in a 3 where it's like they're sharing the workload. I don't think that they've got that kind of stamping yet on an authority where they can be in one of the two deeper ones. That's just my opinion. Sometimes if you take Gibbs-White out of the 10 and you go with kind of three out and out midfielders sharing that, I think that's when Dominguez and Danilo really come to their kind of own because they've got two others in there and they're all sharing the workload. I think when you have a proper number 10 whose main goal is to try and attach onto the striker, It's then a straight midfield too. And I just don't think that them two have the characteristics to play. And also, it's not just the characteristic, it's the discipline. And I think if you looked at, again, on Saturday, if you looked at Danilo, I think he's got so much ability. But he's sometimes, which happens, he sometimes goes off a little bit. He's a bit, he just finds himself in areas which then leaves the, at this point in time, it's been Yates, leaves them kind of isolated, and then we get overrun in that area. And I think that sometimes, as you look as a manager, they're really good centre midfielders, but I can't really trust them or really want to put them as a two yet. They need to be in there as a three. And it's just that sometimes, from a manager's point of view and a tactical point of view, what sometimes fans don't sometimes see, that these players have got so much ability and can play centre midfield, but their characteristics, the way they are, sometimes they need to be in a different formation with another midfield player, not another 10 who's solely on attacking, is another midfield player. So I think in terms of what I said about the signing and trying to make it, again, you look at Sangar, I think that if you looked at it from the outside, he had the characteristics and looked at it to play that discipline of one of them two. But I don't quite think Danilo, and especially Dominguez, can have that discipline to play at the side of the two, and which allows Morgan to go and be free.
Yeah, I think that's really fair. That's articulated really well, my concern about Danilo and Yates and our midfield on Saturday, where it was just a bit lacking. Let's move on to another player, Greg, who's pretty much nailed his place in the team. And if he'd been fit a bit longer, we probably wouldn't be where we are in Willy Bolly. I thought he had a really good game. And also, he's had a very nice hand in two goals, the nod down for Yates and winning the ball and playing it out to Hudson-Odoi. How good has he been? And do you think that if we just had him for 25 games fit, would we be safe by now?
We certainly wouldn't have been top of the set pieces against stats. I think he's the key to stopping those crosses, stopping those attacks, stopping those things that threaten us the most. Yeah, he's a great player. How many more years left have we got of him at that standard? I'm not sure. Maybe there's only one more left in him, but he was superb again. I mean, there's three or four players that really, really stood out, and he was one of them. So, yeah, and having a hand in the goal. Going back to the goals as well, because I did want to say this, all three of them were, you know, training ground goals. There's an absolute fantastic video, fan video. It's going all around the internet of Yates's goal, and you can hear one of the fans moaning like hell about the cross that goes too far. But like they said, it was all a plan. So it's just good that, to give Nuno his credit, things like that are working out. But yeah, back to Bolly. He's guaranteed starter for the last two games of the season, and he makes that defence more sure, stops teams thinking they just need a set piece or a court or a, you know, a throw-in or anything near our box, and they're in. So that's what we need. We need more players like him who we can rely on, and there is a few of them, you know, that will be there next season that have been doing that for us.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I guess the other thing as well is Temps. I think he makes, I mean, Murillo's had a great season. It was lovely to hear his interview in English afterwards, and he seems like a good bloke. But having Bolly alongside him, I just feel like it enhances Murillo's game even more. I know he's picked out a match of the day for the blocks, but he had another excellent game, and his reading of the play is tremendous for his age.
And the ability to execute as well is one thing, spotting what you've got to do. It's the next thing, getting there. He just seems to time that touch, doesn't he? Doesn't always lead with right or left foot. Just technically superb. Knows when to step across. Knows when he has to have a last ditch slide. Knows instinctively where to be. Blocking the Ben Brereton shot and abandoning Cameron Archer is a split second instinctive decision, and he probably looks a bit silly if Brereton does slip that and Archer taps it in back stick first half. So I think there's an instinct there, and what he's going to gain by playing more games and being alongside someone like Willy Bolly is just what to do in the specific circumstances that pop up in games of football. he's at the very infancy of his career. He's showing extreme ability to pick a pass, extreme ability to recover from some pretty desperate situations. He plays clean as well. He's not a hacker. I don't know what his yellow card stats are, but he's firm and firmer, really. I don't think he's going to have too many suspensions. I'm in awe of what he can become. And yeah, we've perhaps worked out the ideal partner for him is someone that attacks the high ball, lets him win the second ball, take on the man-to-man job on their primary striker. And yeah, I'm just so excited about what he can become. I hope we get another season out of him. The Gibbs White to Newcastle rumours are getting a bit stronger, hey? And I would just like to think that if we do cash in our chips with that transfer or one similar, that we can hold on to Murillo. I know Greg mentioned the potential for a war chest of offloading both of those players. But I'll come back again to the point I made earlier. They're the only two players that have started 30 games or more for Forest. I think it's only Elanga that started more than 20, in fact. And by definition, they are our spine. And ripping them both up would be really, really disruptive to what we want to achieve next season.
Yeah, good point. 640 people with us. Do us a favour if you haven't already hit like. That'd be a big help on the stream. The other player to mention, Greg, as well, I think, is probably Matt Sells. At least two big saves in the first half and one in the second. That's off the top of my head. He kept us. I know he made one error, but he did keep us in it. And it's the same question, I guess, with Bolly. If we'd have had Sells from August, I mean, we'd be at least 14th and safe, I imagine. What do you make of Sells and just how he's come in?
We do not need to buy a goalkeeper in the summer. That is like the biggest compliment you'd have to say about him. He's improving. He looks more confident. It looks like the back four or five trust him. He's quicker with his distribution, and he's shot stopping. Some of the saves he's made, world class. No wonder he's like winning plaudits and awards for them. And he did it again on Saturday. Just superb. There's going to be mistakes. He's a goalkeeper, of course. When you have as many shots against us as you get, there's going to be goals going. But the saves that literally saved a goal from going in, they're the ones when they should have scored. And that was possibly his best performance, I'd say, because of the two or three world-class saves that he did. He's our number one goalkeeper. We haven't had a permanent number one goalkeeper since Samba, really. And it's just nice that he's there now and he's got the backup. You know, we've got a bench full of backup goalies. I'm sure a couple of them will be going out in the summer. But yeah, he's the number one now. We don't have to worry about that position. And that's the biggest compliment you could give him. And he should only improve, really.
The clock's ticking. I know Temps is over. We've got about 10 minutes left with Temps. So we'll move on. We spent this whole episode talking as if we're safe. I'm still worried, having watched the games yesterday. Temps is absolutely convinced. So I'll ask the other lads how they're feeling. Are you still convinced Temps we're safe, even after seeing Chelsea v West Ham and Spurs lose again yesterday?
Yeah, we've done enough already. I think that our threshold has already been met because of the positive goal difference. I think they're dejected, having seen our positive result. I still think we'll pick up points, or at least a point from where we find ourselves now. There's two Chelseas, we all know that. They've been impressive recently. Cole Palmer's been on fire most of the season and done pretty well for my FPL team, but he's been surrounded by inconsistent players himself, and that's why they're outside of the top four. So yeah, I do think we're already safe. I'd like another point, of course, because anything can happen. But for Luton to get 4 points from this point seems unlikely. For Burnley to get 6 points from this point seems impossible. And I think we'll raise the bar again. So absolutely no relegation concern from me. I've got a cigar on.
My word, that'll come back to bite us potentially. Shout out to Kevin's dad, John. Get well soon, John. 89, but yeah, sorry to hear about your broken leg, but like we say, get well soon. Right, Lewis, how are you feeling about it, and how will the players be viewing it in the dressing room this week? Will it be business as usual, or secretly will they think, yeah, we're probably safe now, and is that a dangerous mentality?
Listen, I think it will be business as usual. We've still got two games to go. Yes, okay, we've put ourselves in a great position, but at this point in time, that's all it is. Until it's kind of nailed on the tin and it's confirmed, it's football, you never know what can happen. So I think, listen, we've put ourselves in a great position after Saturday, and I think that was the big game. I think that was the big game. That was the big point swing. I think also you have to look at it. I mentioned it a few times. It's the other team's chasing, but it's have they got that drive? And I think slowly since that, since over the last 3 or 4 weeks, I think Luton have slowly struggled. I think if you look at their game against Brentford at home, which was a massive game for them not to pick up any points. I think, again, you look at Friday night, I think that was a banker for them. If you looked around, especially you looked at the manager's interview after, it was really dejected. They knew that was a must win. So there you have to also look at their training ground and their kind of mentality and how they're feeling. And I think you'll again look at Burnley. They get a decent result, even a point against Newcastle. They still got that little bit of a bump, but they've got a loss 4-0. So I think everything around us with the two teams has gone our way. And I think now we just need to go and confirm it. It's going to be a really good atmosphere against Chelsea. I think we've at least got capability to get a point. I still think that we can go and get a win and really put the ice on the cake. But I think, again, it's in our hands what we've always wanted to be. And I think the two teams around us, I think they're not chomping at us with a real good feeling. I think they're a lot more dejected than positive. So I think everything in the bigger scale is going in our way. But from a changing room environment, from the management, I'm sure they'll be back to work this week. Looking at Chelsea, yes, we're in a great position, but that's all it is at this point in time.
As Mark says, do us a favour, hit like, and do hit subscribe as well. Thanks, Mark. How are you feeling about it, Greg? Just bear in mind, I mean, Chelsea won 5-0 yesterday. I know West Ham hit the bar three times, so did create chances. But you're pretty convinced we're going to do the double over Chelsea. Is that you being ultra-optimistic or not, do you think?
I think Temps is the ultra-optimistic one now. Is that what, like, the fast show vibes? But I'm still nervous. Of course I am, because, you know, nice things don't seem to happen, but it feels now like deja vu of last year. We were going to play Arsenal at the later game. The teams around us were playing at the 3 o'clock. So I remember Everton got that like last minute equaliser, I think, that made us realise we've got to get the win. I just think it's going to be exactly the same. I think we're going to beat Chelsea and it'll just be a memorable day again. But we don't want to keep doing this each year. We want to have a boring mid-table season or two, but it's still going to be nerve-wracking watching those 3 o'clock games or watching Sky Sports and seeing the results come in. Not going to be that much fun unless there's some early goals. But yeah, I'm nervous. I'm excited though, unlike I was this time last week. I'm excited for the end rather than dreading it, so that has to be a good sign.
What's going on here? This is the Greg Mitchell that predicted we were going to get promoted to the Premier League when we were 24th in the Championship. He would have told me weeks ago we were going to get 6 points from the last two games and none of this really matters anyway. Everybody chill. And now I'm the everything's brilliant fella from the Fast Show. Put yourself exactly out, Mitchell.
Hey, but I trust your opinion, so you've made it even better for me. I think we'll beat Chelsea. We'll beat Chelsea and it'll be all over. And you never know, it might be all over before we kick a ball, which could be crazy. But we'll see how this week goes.
One other X factor is the points appeal. We might get points back or a point back. We either hear that today or tomorrow, or certainly looks like before the game. So that could be a big factor in our favour. Just before we go, just looking at the Chelsea game, Lewis, out of curiosity, I kind of like to go back to that back three. I just think we look a bit more secure, especially against a good team. Chelsea are, Cole Palmer takes up these good positions and Jackson's suddenly a striker in form. Would you go stick with the back four or back five? How would you like to see us line up in that one?
Yeah, I think if you look at the way we shaped up against Man City and against the better teams, I think it suited us. I think we looked very well defensively for long periods of that game. And I also think about it's a big, maybe a point looking at it in terms of moving forward in terms of next year. I think a lot of fans even today have kind of made the impression that Bolly's made and coming back into the team and alongside Murillo, but can he stay fit? I also think maybe looking at it, if you look at back three, that's kind of Nuno's blueprint. It has been his blueprint for a lot of his managerial career. And I think if you look at Bolly, maybe trying to get the best out of him, but obviously looking after his legs, putting him in the middle of a back three with Murillo one side and another the other side, who's got the legs. So I think in terms of building now kind of platforms to how we're going to go forward, I think maybe that's where the manager's going to see it. And I think the impact that Bolly's had in the last few weeks, again, it's a big thing. Can he stay fit and can we look after him? I think we also need to look at maybe looking after him in terms of formation. I'm sure the manager's looking at that. And I'm pretty sure that we'll go back to a back three against Chelsea. It's sometimes really hard for a manager. I know you play a formation, you play a back three, we look really strong. But again, you go into these games, especially Man City, thinking that majority of the ball you're not going to have. So you set up in a very kind of defensive mindset and you're sitting in blocks and it's easy to do. But then when you then, we're not in the Forest, we want to play on the front foot, but when we go away to Sheffield United or relegated, it's very hard to kind of have that same mindset of sitting in the back three, sitting in them low blocks and waiting. We need to go on the front foot. And as you, I'm sure you're more all aware that fans, if we'd have gone there and played a back three and looked very defensive and lost the game, it would have been, you know what I mean? It would have been why we're so defensive, blah, blah. But that's football, and that's what we deal with. But I think in terms of the long-term looking forward, I think we're going to have that foundation with a back three, but we just need to tweak the other areas to allow us to still have that real potent attacking force to come into the game. But as of Saturday, I'm pretty sure that it will be to be a back three.
Temps, we've got to let you go. Any final words? I'll throw to any of the business effectively. Anything you want to say before you go? Because I know you've got a meeting. You're actually working.
Get down to Trent Bridge on 4 o'clock and come and have a look at my food festival. I'd go back four. I think we need to find a way to deny space to opposing teams, centre mid, and it's our best chance of scoring is to have more progressive players on the pitch. Questioning myself because a point against Chelsea is massive, and I wonder if we could set out with that objective rather than trying to win a game. So really interested to see what he does, but in what is a decision which you could argue both ways for and against, I'm picking a back four and I'm picking Harry Toffolo. See you, fellas.
See you later. Right. Well, I go back three because Bolly worries me a little bit more in like a broken field when teams are running at you with a back four. Quite like Lewis says, look after him a little bit. I think I prefer that. Just before we go to any other business, any other thoughts on that Chelsea game, Greg, and how you'd like to see us go about it? And does it also, just quickly, does it change if we know we're safe? Do we rip it up and go back four? Let's have a go. Let's all have a party. Do you think Nuno has that mindset in him or not?
No, I don't think anything will change from what they've planned for the entire week. And every point counts. You still never know what's going to happen. Even after we're confirmed safe with this league, they could soon change that. No, I think he'll play like he did against Man City, conservative, but try and take chances on the rare occasions we get them. And more than Man City, where there's so many dangerous players, it seems their key is Cole Palmer. So address him. And I'm sure they will in the comments they were on about just put Yates on him for 90 odd minutes. I kind of get that because he is key to them. Everything goes through him. Every opportunity, every chance seems to go through him. So sort Cole Palmer out and we can do it. But also take advantage of the likes of Hudson-Odoi. It's clear how we score goals with him now. So Chelsea will know that. So I'm sure there's a training ground routine happening this week where we kind of fake that and do something else, hopefully, because we have got goals in us and it's only just starting to show. So I think set up like Man City, be a bit more conservative, but then get them when we can.
If I thought Danilo had the discipline, I'd love to see Danilo try and man mark Cole Palmer with his athleticism. I'm not quite sure he does. Just before we go to any other business and final thoughts, like I said, if you haven't already, do hit like, do subscribe, you can become a channel member, and I love to read any 5-star review on iTunes and Spotify. Lewis, any final thoughts, any other business, anything you want to say before we go?
Nope, nothing.
Good, short and sweet. Greg Mitchell, anything from you?
gives me more time than that. Cheers. Just June the 8th at the Trent Ave, Forza Fest. Tickets are selling well. All the bands have confirmed it's going to be a brilliant day. So it's all over my Twitter and in my profiles and stuff. So if you like your live music, like your local bands, then get down there because it'll be a great day. You buy tickets through Gigantic and it's our favourite pub. So it'll be a great one.
Certainly will. Was there anything else? Is that all?
Yeah.
Good.
Nothing else.
I've got a music one. I'm encroaching on your territory here. But since I said how much I hate the theme tune of this podcast, I've had a couple of people reach out to me, say they'll sort us a new one. So someone's in the process of sorting that. But a second band called Last Arrow got in second, so they missed out. But they do have a new single out called Garibaldi Boys. And I'll drop the link in the description for this episode. So it's Last Arrow, Garibaldi Boys. Do check that out. On YouTube, and they're on Twitter as well. Right, I think that's everything.
I've got one more thing.
Oh, of course you have. Go on.
A guest on here, previous guest, Barstool Chief. Have you seen his jumping in Lake Michigan now because of Ryan Yates's goal? He claimed it on at Forest All Over podcast a few months ago or a few weeks ago, so now he's got to stick to it. So looking forward to the video of that one because it's still cold out there.
I hope their lakes are cleaner than ours.
Yeah, right. Don't jump in the Trent.
Don't jump in the Trent. We don't want any kind of E. coli or Legionnaires disease thanks to this podcast. So, yeah. Right, we shall leave it there. We'll be back tomorrow, I think, with something. Maybe points related, we'll see. And then Wednesday with Paul Taylor and Mikey is the plan. Then Thursday match preview, Friday opposition preview, and then it's Chelsea. Right, Lewis McGugan, thank you very much.
No problem, anytime.
You're a good man. Good to have you with us as ever. Greg Mitchell, thank you.
Yep, see you next time after another win.
That's the way, after another win. Right, have a good day, everyone. Enjoy the bank holiday. Enjoy the sun, and we shall see you soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.